America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Ben, do you know what I was thinking about while we were doing the thumbnailingtons just now?
What were you thinking about when we were doing the thumbnailingtons just now?
Okay, so you know like the classic imagery for Home Alone?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Like right. the hands-on face thing.
Hands-on face screaming.
Yeah, which was always one of those things where is that like aftershave? Is that supposed to like burn?
I'm glad this is exactly what you brought up, Ben, because yes, one, what always bothers me about the imagery for Home Alone is that him making that face has nothing to do with him being like the wet bandits invading the house.
That's so true. Yeah.
Like he never makes that face. It's not like, oh my God, there's burglars. It's like he makes the face when he is in his parents' bathroom and he puts aftershave, I guess, on his face. I guess that's what's happening. And like every time I watch that movie, like every single time, it makes me feel so dumb because I watch that scene and I have no idea what's happening. Like he puts it on his face and it must burn, but I'm like, I think aftershave is something that has just like gone by the wayside. Maybe like I've never used it. Whatever he's putting on his face, don't know what it is.
I literally don't know what. Yeah, I don't know what aftershave is, or if it is different from cologne, or like if it was supposed to help with, like if instead of like a scent related thing, if it was supposed to help like cool like ease your face after you've like had like a close shave or something like that.
But here's the thing, he's not shaving.
Oh no, I know. Yeah, I mean he's a small child.
He has not shaved his face. He has nothing to shave. He's just like putting it on. It's like presumably he's putting it on because he's seen his dad do this.
Yes,
but like to me, if it burns. If it's supposed to be something post-shave and it burns, then it must just be because whatever you're putting on your face, like it like hurts on the newly like razored skin,
right?
Which he would not have.
Yes. Yeah. So,
like,
yeah.
What is he like? If it just hurts to put on your skin at all, this like how did this ever catch on? And maybe this is why it's not around anymore. But like, it always makes me feel so dumb because I'm like, this is a little kid interacting with an adult man's thing, and that's. Like why? I guess why it's funny, but like now I'm an adult and I still don't know what's happening, and it makes me feel extra dumb because it's like the poster of the movie.
I know it's such iconic imagery.
The movie doesn't go away because it's a Christmas movie, and it comes back every year, and I have to feel dumb every year.
But it would be hilarious to me if the image that they did famously use on the cover or on like all the you know posters and everything was for something that was actually like a little bit of like a movie fail too. If it was sort of like, okay, like we did it because it would be funny and because like most adults when they're shaving like kind of famously like stings when you put it on your face, but of course it wouldn't actually hurt him because he's not actually doing anything, you know, but then like it became like so like relevant, or it seemed to like express his it was the best image we had of Macaulay Culkin looking just like terrified or shocked or something, alarmed, you know, so it fit really well with like with what we're going for here, but also it never would have bothered him in the first place because he wasn't actually shaving because blah blah blah. But it's funny because it actually does remind me when I was a little kid, I remember going over to my childhood best friend's house. Yeah. And we, I feel like in our house, we didn't really do like the mouthwash thing, you know, like Listerine or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know, which, I don't know really why, but this was like one of those things, like when I would go over to my friend's house, it was sort of like a novelty,
yeah.
Like, you know, part of the experience was like you go and brush your teeth. And then they had like the beginner mode, which was like bubblegum flavored mouthwash,
sure.
Which was my personal preference
yeah.
Because the first first time you ever do like actual Listerine mouthwash, it is like, whoo, okay. Like, yeah. You know, I feel like I'm breathing
it's
out like,
the alcohol in it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I feel like I'm breathing fumes or something afterwards. It was like such a, like, I don't know what, I, like, so I could almost see, you know, if you've like lived your life up to a certain point, you've never experienced like the full blown, like Listerine mouthwash experience. And then you do, it's sort of like, whoa. Like that was a lot, but it still wouldn't merit the hands on the face scream reaction.
Right.
So it must be the case that whatever aftershave was intending to do was even more like visceral.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess so. So anyway, I was making a face during the thumbnails where I put my hands on my face like Home Alone style.
Nice.
And it just then I felt dumb because I was like, hey, this is a Home Alone thing. I was like, that's a joke I don't get, but I feel like I should because I'm 35.
So. Right, right. Yeah. It's like at this point, I probably should have interacted with whatever he was interacting with.
It is such an example too of something that I could like, it feels like I should so easily be able to Google. And even though no one would know that I'd Google it, I'd feel so embarrassed for having needed to Google it.
Yeah.
You know, like how does that stop you ever? You're like, boy, the answer is there, but I'm pretty embarrassed even to look it up, even though that would just give me the answer.
No, I don't have that. This is almost like your salad guilt from last week.
Oh, yeah.
where it's like I feel like I don't have any. Well, actually, okay. Mm-hmm. I was about to say I don't have any shame about Googling something. I will say that because my we have an iMac in like our kitchen at home, and so like all of the Apple devices or whatever are all synced up. So like the stuff that I Google and search at work versus like from my phone versus from like the home computer, like it all has like the same iCloudified ominous.
Right, you're logged into like the same Gmail account everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So like all of the information. So it's always really complicated. But like when I'm Christmas shopping for Alice, because like if she goes and she like opens up the computer and like, you know, clicks like the search bar and it drops down like the recently searched thing, and it's like, oh, you know, like that must be a like. I'm afraid it'll be like a giveaway.
Right.
So sometimes what I'll, or not even sometimes, when I'm Christmas shopping for Alice in particular, I'll always go like incognito.
Yeah.
And that way it's like, it's like being like preserved or whatever from that particular like drop down menus and that type of thing. And so I will say like occasionally there will be a search that I will do where it's like, I would rather if this existed somewhere else.
So right.
Like when Alice like logs in later, she's not like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ben doesn't know how trapezoids work or something like that. But then on the flip side of this, I mean it is hilarious and also like I'm gonna say upsetting, but it's not actually upsetting, but like very frequently we will have conversations in like the main area here at SCB where we'll be like talking about like, oh yeah, who did win Best Picture last year, and it's like, was it so-and-so? It's like, oh no, I can't remember. No, maybe it was this one. And it was like we could solve this really fast,
right?
And I don't know if this is something that maybe more people like the game of being like, no, I can remember, I don't want to look it up because it's in my brain and I can get there on my own. And maybe for me, I'm just like, shortest path is always the easiest.
Right.
Like, it's like, let's just get to the answer. Like this is so solvable that like, you won't even have to click a web page. Like the auto filled like result will tell you
be there.
Yeah. Who won Best Picture last year or whatever.
Yeah.
So I can never tell whether or not this is like a pride type thing. It's like, no, I can do this. Like,
right.
You know, it's like, I will not resort to looking up the answer because I can remember it.
Yeah. It's like, in a weird way, like having a conversation about who won Best Actor last year at the Academy Awards. It's kind of like, it's like a very old fashioned conversation, you know, like trying to discuss the information out of yourselves when you could just get the answer.
So
it's like so readily available.
This is interesting because I think like a lot of what we do, like you've always done such a remarkable job of like maintaining like trivia in your brain about like all the various things that we cover and a lot of things that we don't cover.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure that, okay. Let's see here.
Oh boy.
What is, in Rugrats, the TV show.
Yeah.
What is Susie's last name?
Carmichael.
Wow. Wow.
What a great example.
It's like, let me just pick something. Like, I haven't thought about or watched an episode of Rugrats in 20 years easily.
Uh-huh.
If
you
not,
didn't know that? But you still knew Susie's name.
As I was pulling the thought together, I was like, what's a good example of a question that we can deep dive into here? But like, you've always been so good at this. But like, one of the things that I think has blown my mind, and so like, we do like our trivia show, Jay vs. Ben or whatever. And for a very long time, I mean, I think this past year, I think that we finally reached maybe a closer state of like competitiveness,
yeah,
at least in those shows. But forever and ever and ever, it was something where I, like, you know, if I won two a year, it was like, whoa like,
Ben
like,
won.
It wasn't even Ben won. It was like, what happened to Jay that day? You know, like, he must have been distracted.
Right,
or
the
like,
story's still about me somehow.
Yes,
right,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it was like, it was you had a bad day, not me having a good day.
Dude, this used to drive me crazy in college about the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
Like, I would like watch a lot of like NFL football back then. And of course, the Cowboys are almost always better than the Commanders or, yeah, you know, or Washington. And they're, yeah, like one of the big rivals, but it would drive me crazy because you'd have like a, like, you know, you'd sit down, you'd watch a game, and you were just positive the Cowboys are going to roll over you yet again, and somehow Washington would pull out a victory, and it'd be like, no freaking way, what an amazing day. And I would just relish like logging in to like ESPN the next day to be like, let's hear all about how great the Commanders were. And it's just like, wow, the Cowboys really fell down. Or
yeah,
it's like, yeah, there. Washington had nothing to do with winning that game. It was 1,000% the Cowboys getting in their own way.
Exactly.
Oh, how it would drive me crazy.
Yes, no, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. So I think forever and ever. But like, I haven't ever really felt like my lack of trivia knowledge has ever been like, I never feel like it truly holds us back while we're like writing theories, mm-hmm, you know? So it's like, and I think because a lot of that is like, you know, we've got like all of our like resources constantly ready at hand. And so, yeah, it's like, who said that line again? It's just like, you know, I'll punch it into like, you know, our like database or whatever. It's like, oh, that's right, Lavender Brown. And, you know, and then you know the answer to the question, and then you're able to just like march forward with the piece of knowledge in mind. And so a lot of times I wonder whether or not I offload, you know, or almost like cloud store a lot of knowledge where it's like, I don't know, I can't pull it off on my own. If I'm on a deserted island with no information whatsoever, like, I will never be able to find that Lavender Brown said that sentence.
Right.
But like what I have allowed myself to do is not increase like my brain's cash by keeping it ready at hand, because what I have allowed myself to know is like, well, you can look it up very quickly. Like, you can have the answer to this. If there's ever a meaningful reason why you need to know, you can find it very fast.
Yeah.
And therefore, no need to store.
No need to store anything.
But this is like, it's kind of a curiosity, because I think in general, I would say, and you could argue this, and so I'm curious to see.
Okay.
I think that I operate with a scarcity mindset basically at all times.
Okay.
And I would assert that maybe you're on the opposite end of the spectrum and you have an abundance mindset. And so at least from our memory storage standpoint, you're like, man, the more I know, the more it tells me I can know more.
Right.
Like I've been able to learn all these facts, which means that like, I trust that I'll be able to learn more facts, which helps me learn and memorize even more facts.
Right.
You know? And so like, as you progress through life, it doesn't seem like you've ever like been encumbered by like, man, should I offload some of this like, hey Arnold knowledge I have like, from our
like
childhood?
Your brain is like, I need to dump this so that I can learn more things. I have to be very selective about the amount of things, whereas my brain's like, there's basically infinite space, don't worry about that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So and I think that's exactly what happens to me, where it's like, you know, if I'm like trying to like enter some new fictional domain, or if I'm like taking in like a new TV show or something like that, like a lot of times I will, it's almost like, I mean, I'm not actually consciously like parsing through like what to let go of or anything, but there's a small piece of me that's almost like, man, I'm really getting into Gilded Age lately, which means that like Shadow and Bone is going to have to go, you know,
go.
Like I think on some level it's one of two things. Like it's either maybe you weren't as invested in it to the tune of, because this surprises me sometimes, like the number of TV shows or like reality shows or something that I've watched where you could like show me a person who was on the show and I wouldn't remember them at all.
This happens, yeah, like certainly like on shows like Survivor or something,
right?
Where like sometimes like I couldn't even tell you who won a season, even though I watched the whole season,
like aggressively,
like,
you know,
aggressively,
like, you know,
yeah.
You're making all the moves in your head, you know, yeah, the alliances, you know, like all the this, that, the whatevers.
Well, but, I mean, yeah. Certainly, like, sometimes I'll just watch it and, like, the characters will be having conversations and it's like the show has gone to such great lengths to try and, like confuse you out of knowing who's going to win the vote for the sake of drama that, like, I'm like, I can't even keep track of who is in an alliance with who because it changes, like, by the minute. And, like, this past season was a great example of, like, there was, like, four, like, it was a great example of really good reality TV show editing, I thought.
Okay.
Because there was a... There was like a red tribe that there was like four of them left at the merge and they basically just ran the whole game. And that four alliance just did everything they wanted to the whole game. And they were very powerful. And you could tell, like, if you're watching the show, the ways in which, like, every single episode they would try and undermine you as the viewer, like, oh man, maybe the red alliance is gonna break or maybe they're gonna vote differently this week. And it's like, no, every single time they'd set you up for it to happen. Like, clearly they'd take one of the red guys aside and be like, are you considering voting for someone else? What would make you vote for someone else? And they just play that answer and you'd be like, oh man, maybe Drew's gonna break the alliance. But like, they didn't at all.
Yeah,
just,
right.
Like, it's like, it was very obvious those four people are just going and that's, there's nothing they can do about it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. And then that's the other thing too, is that, like, when I'm watching the show, a lot of times I'm like, all I'm playing in my head over and over and over is whether or not it's like, could I do this? What would I do in this situation? How would I respond to that? Who would I go talk to? Would I trust this person? Would I be like, would I lie? Would I, like, you know,
yeah.
And this is exactly where I think they edit together reality TV in such a good way that, like, you sitting there on the couch are, like, almost, like, overwhelmed because you're like, oh my gosh, but then this person talked to that person and then who are they voting for? And they're trying to split the votes and, oh my gosh, I, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I wonder if in real life it's, like, a lot more...
like, obvious.
And I don't even know if, like, obvious is the right thing. Like, because, I mean, obviously blindsides happen. People say, like, I was blindsided. Like, I didn't know this was coming. But, like, I do wonder if it's less confusing in real life. And they're showing you this, like, weird Rubik's Cube twisted knot version of events because that helps it be entertaining to, like, watch whatever unfolds.
Yeah.
There's almost a very clear formula where it seems like, you know, they come out of the, like, whatever challenge, somebody's won immunity. They'll basically say right away, like, this person's going home and there's no way that they could save themselves. That person's never going home.
Right.
Like, you know, they'll always establish right away, this person, they're doomed.
Or even if it is the case where it's just like, yeah, as long as that person doesn't win the challenge, they're going home. And, like, even if that's completely true, that, like, okay, they didn't win the challenge and everyone just knows, yeah, it's going, and they'll come back no matter what. They will throw in an extra edit that's like, they made a play for it. Who knows? Maybe they flipped three people or whatever.
Right, they won't
let you just, like, go into tribal council knowing what's going to happen. They will try and throw, like, a slice of doubt at you.
Yes,
for the sake of the entertainment. And, like, thank goodness they do, because otherwise I think there'd be a lot of seasons where it's just very boring.
Right. It's just, like, dominating whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know how we fully.
The point is, there are people, like, sometimes I'll, like, listen to people talk about Survivor and they're like, oh yeah, Franny was so good, and I'd be like, I can't tell you who Franny was. Couldn't tell you, you know, like, I remember that's a person who played Survivor, but what she did, what she looks like, how far she got, you know.
Okay, well, maybe I have a perfect transition then because of this. Because this sounds to me almost like a perfect representation of a new phenomenon, a new psychological observance that I have to credit our dad. After Christmas, I was chatting with him and he was telling me about it. He was like, I feel like it applies to you in a really good way. And I couldn't remember the name of it. And then literally on break, I was listening to the Freakonomics podcast where I stumbled across the very episode he was telling me about.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, no way. So credit to dad, credit to Freakonomics. No stupid questions, I think, is, like, the subcategory for it, just for the purposes. But I think the exact thing that we're describing, like, where you can, like, watch the show, you're so involved, you're so invested, and then the show is over and you, like, dump it all, is, I think it's a good example of what's called, and I could be pronouncing it wrong, but I'm going to go for it, the Zygarnik effect.
That's a $10 word.
I know, right?
So Zygarnik.
I love that already. I'm going to try to use that. But I think the name comes from, I believe, the researcher who originally put together the concept, where as the story goes, this researcher and maybe, like, some fellows, about, like, you know, I think it's maybe like 100 years ago or something like that. It's been around for a while. But they all went out to this, like, fancy dinner at a restaurant where there was, like, a whole bunch of different, like, orders and like drink orders and all the stuff that was going on. And they had this like phenomenal waiter in the whole time that they're there. You know, the waiter is just on top of everything, knows every single person's like individual meal preferences, is like super on top of like where they're at and their drinks and what their refill might be and all the rest.
Right. Okay.
And so the whole crowd as they're at the restaurant is just like in awe of this waiter's ability to have just met all of these people and to have known them so well right away.
Right.
So in this example, this would be like us watching Survivor.
Right.
So it's like, you know, while you're inside of the episode, while you're inside of the season, you know everybody, you know all the moves, you know all the strategies, you know like what everybody's kind of doing, like what their plays are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, alliances,
yeah,
all the rest. And then this group of people leaves the restaurant, and one of them realizes they've like left something back at the table. So they run back into the restaurant and flag down the waiter that they just had, who they're, you know, of course, and like so impressed with the, you know, the memory. And they're like, hey, I was just sitting at that table over there. I think I left my jacket. And the waiter is like, I'm sorry. Like, who are you? And they were like, wait, you remember all of our meals, all of our preferences, all of our drink orders, and you don't remember me from 10 minutes ago?
Right.
And so they've said that as time has gone on, this particular story is kind of like part of the mythos of the origin story.
Okay.
And maybe it's just a very good representation of
yeah, how what they're going for,
how the concept came to be. But it doesn't mean that it's not still a fairly real concept, which is that for that waiter, it's very important while the guests are there to be like, that's what this person is doing. You know, like they need to be able to cater to, you know, the guests as best as possible and provide them with a positive experience and all the rest. But then like, once they're gone, it's like, it's not important for them to know this information out in the real world. Like it's not information that is going to be beneficial as time goes on. And so pretty much as soon as that table clears, it's like, clear the memory.
Yeah. Like tomorrow, it does not matter what Mrs. Smith ordered as an entree.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it will never be useful information again.
Right. And so you can translate this oftentimes, like if you were ever one of those students, you know, in high school or college or whatever, where you would go and you would like cram for an exam, you would take the exam, and then the moment the exam was over, it was sort of like, can you still explain what mitosis is? And it's like, no. It's like, but you got an A. It's like, you should be able to. Like, you learned it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I learned it enough to pass the examination. And then once the examination was over, I didn't have a practical application for that information. So I let go of it.
Right.
Now, what's interesting about this is I think as it translates. So to me, that's the Survivor example. It's like, it's important to know everybody's strategies and stuff like that while you're watching. But then like once you know who wins, once you get the answer to the question, who is going to like emerge triumphant.
Yeah.
The rest of it doesn't super matter.
Right.
So maybe the main thing you might remember is the winner of a season, but even then, like once you get to the next season, you've got like a whole new batch of characters to pay attention to. And maybe at this point in time, like whoever won season 44 isn't ultra relevant to season 45 because, you know, like now you've got like that same strategy might not work again.
Right.
You know,
yeah, because it's a different group of people.
It's a different group of people, different group of personalities, different alliances altogether. So even that information might just get like dumped from the back of your brain. But the other question with this, then it has to do with the concept of closure. And basically like what's happening is that like the closure that you get while watching the game of Survivor or taking your exam is successfully completing the mission. And once you've completed the mission, you're able to let it go. The problem is that, and as the Zeigarnik effect, as it applies to closure out there in the real world, is that a lot of times people need a sense of closure with another individual because without it, they can't pass the test. They can't see the finale. So all you would ever know is like you're like left in this sort of like limbo land where like something has happened with another person, and because you've never like gotten to the end of the test, so to speak, you don't ever get to let go of the information, and then that information just like lives with you. So like if you're ever lying awake in the middle of the night, like having like an argument with somebody in your head where you never got to like get in the last word or like solve the problem or feel at peace with that person about something, it's like you can't let it go. And then it like, that's like rumination, you know, like that is the problem where now it's just like in this cycle and it lives rent free in your head. Does this ever happen to you is like one question.
Yeah, I think so. Where it just sort of feels like, boy, it's been like, years since something happened. And sometimes if I let my mind wander over to a situation, it's just like, yeah, I can pick you right back up with all the injustices of this situation.
Yeah.
Even though like none of these people even live here and I haven't talked to them in, you know, 2 years or
yes.
whatever. It's just like, yeah, but like somehow the information still just like feels fresh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's just like, it's like completely, completely unresolved. And, you know, so one of the interesting examples of this for me is, one of the like shock factors I'll occasionally get is, once upon a time, I would say I had what I would regard as the best breakup of my life.
Oh, great.
And this was like one of those things where going back to high school, I was probably the worst about a breakup because like there's, I mean, as like your classic people pleaser, to me, there's nothing in the world worse than making this person not happy. Like, I don't want that to happen. Even if by being with them, they are making me unhappy, I would still rather not hurt their feelings.
Right.
You know, it's like that stinks and I don't want to have to do this. And so I would constantly like, you know, try to soften the blow, or like, you know, there's all the cliche lines like, we could still be friends, or like maybe we'll just like take a break for a little while and we could try again at some other time,
right?
You know, or one of those things. And what it would do is it would leave the person with this without closure, with a lingering sense of hope that maybe it's not over yet, that maybe there's still something that could come from this if like the circumstances align more correctly, which very frequently just is not the case. The person is just attempting to let you down gently.
Right.
The irony is that in attempting to let somebody down gently, you might be doing more harm.
Right.
Because you've left that door open. You've
right.
You've,
the wound is left open. There's no stitches.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, you might get to the final vote in Survivor, and it's sort of like, well, we're pretty sure that this person won, but we're going to have to wait like a year until we can like re-review the tapes because the other person may have actually won. So like, we're going to have to wait and find out, you know, and it's kind of like, all right. Okay. Well then, but I'd be willing to bet that if that happened, then you might be more invested for that whole year in waiting to find the outcome.
Right.
So I feel like once upon a time, when I say like I had the best breakup of my life, what I did was like going into it is I was like, this is not a decision that I can make lightly. You know, this is a decision that I need to be very clear in my intentions about how I am doing this. And I think that came from a certain amount of, you know, like experience and then just overall maturity in life and kind of like growing as an individual and everything. But more than anything, it was like, I know that the worst thing I could do for this person is to leave any hope on the table at all.
Right.
And so in the breakup, that was what I did. It was just sort of like, there is absolutely no chance that I would like revisit this. Like, this has to be it. This will be done forever. And that's that.
Right.
And what has been amazing to me is that since that day, I have never once had the compulsion to go and like do like the Facebook stalking, the Instagram, you know, like whatever, and be like, well, what are they up to now? Like, what's going on?
What happened?
Where did their life go?
Yeah.
You know, like I don't have any lingering curiosity. Like I absolutely unequivocally let it go.
Yeah.
Which is not common for me. If you know me as like an individual,
that's
like,
true.
Like I can have a conversation that everybody in the room thought went fine and then go and spend the entire weekend thinking about like, you know, like, oh, but there was that one burr, you know? And all I can think about was that one little thing. Like, did that go okay? Was that how I intended? Did they mean something to me? Were they trying to speak in code? Should I talk to them? Like, you know, like I have this, like, you know, so to me, it was so jarring almost because of the differences in these situations. Like one of them was like a major paradigm life shifting moment for me. Whereas like the other was a conversation, like, you know, amongst friends, where I was like, you know, did I say something that may have come across poorly and then I don't sleep because of it?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh, well, like of these two things, one of them was way bigger than the other one. And yet,
right. Like, why is it so easy to forget this giant thing? Whereas this like tiny, worst case scenario, someone was lightly bothered for a few seconds.
Yes, right, yes. And it's funny because I think on some level, my brain like unconsciously figured this out because I used to leave lots of hangouts with friends.
Yeah.
And I would text people afterwards and I'm like, hey, I just want to make sure everything was okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and like, I'll get to the end of like a, like an evening or a hangout or whatever. And so dad told me about this on Christmas and I had some friends over, you know, that evening to just hang out and do holiday festive stuff.
Right. I was there.
Yeah. But literally, so I was explaining this concept to them and I was telling them, you know, like, I think part of my problem is I'll get to the end of like a party at the end of the night or whatever. And I'm like, oh man, I talked to so many people. Surely I stepped in it at some point in time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we're having this big discussion. We're all looking at each other and we're like, are we all good? Are we all good? You good? You good? You good? We're good. We're good. Nobody has to ruminate. We're all good. It was like, but it was amazingly helpful to me.
Really?
To just sort of be like, okay, nothing left unsaid. You can hit me with it right now. Like, are we good? Mm-hmm. And it was like, we are good. Lock eyes. Good. So anyway, this is, it's just been very interesting to me because it makes me wonder. I think a lot of times when I have something left over, I worry about going and disrupting someone's life. So like if I'm ruminating on something from something that happened years ago, we sometimes talk about like the heavyweights conversation, which is a
completely... Oh yeah, heavyweights is just a different podcast. Basically the whole premise of that show is to close these doors.
Yes. And I think that like when I've listened to that show in the past, like, so this could be the case where like maybe somebody excluded you or denied you entrance to a fraternity in college and it's been 15 years and you always felt like your life took on a completely different path because of it. And so then the host will reach out to the president of the, you know, fraternity, sorority, the time you were there, they'll get you both on a, you know, a Zoom call. Yeah. There'll be like a big discussion. It's like, hey, this happened. Was there a reason why I wasn't involved? It's like, yeah, we actually thought it'd be for your own good. We were worried about you. And it's like, no way. That was the reason. It's like, oh, that's so good. You know, like whatever.
Cause I felt bad about myself for 15 years. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Yeah. So you can finally let go of it. And so my big debate is often that like I could have people in my life where it's like, gosh, I feel like there is this like thing left undone with that person. And I would love to solve it. I would love to reach out and just be like, hey, can we talk? But I am always just like so in my head about it. Like as if I go and I open that door even further, it's going to make it so much worse.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like what, you know, there's one situation where the person's like, I am so glad you said something because this keeps me awake at night too.
Right.
You know, or they're just like, wow, that was no big deal. Like you have nothing to worry about. I promise. Like right. Everything's fine. You know, it's like there's good scenarios it could go. And then there's the one where it's like, why are you bringing this up? I've moved on with my life. And now you're like, now for your own peace of mind, you're barging back in here and rustling like, up negative
you're
feelings.
You're like letting me know that this thing I haven't thought about for 20 years I've actually been like this enormous pain on your life.
And yes, exactly. Yeah.
Like now I have to feel guilty about that. Yeah.
Right. And so this is the the mental debate that I feel like since I heard mm-hmm. it, cause I was like, man, there are things where I bet I could alleviate so much pressure on my mind. Like, you know, so much of what my brain space spends time on.
Right.
If I would just be willing to go and like attempt to have a handful of conversations.
Right.
But I'm really scared to do it.
Right. Like what if it makes it worse?
What if it makes it worse? Things. Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, cause I like that's the big thing. It's like, you don't want like, I would love the relief of knowing that things are okay between anyone, but also like, but I don't want to be harmful in the process.
Right.
That's the too long didn't read.
Right.
So anyway, that's been like the big sort of like, okay, this is something. And especially kind of like learning about it, like coming into the new year, it was kind of like, is this something like I could spend the year? Like, I don't need to do it all at once. I don't need to go like burden myself with that. But like, should I attempt to go and see what happens?
I suppose there's probably like, just have like, there's probably a way to be more aware of like when it's about to happen.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, if something happened, you know, 10 years ago and you're still on it, you're right. Like there's that risk of like, ooh, is bringing it up with that person going to make it like worse? But like you could potentially also now sort of like start to recognize the pattern. Like, oh, this person's about to like, I'm entering a conversation that has unresolved things or like that I should actively try and like close the door on right now, lest it fester.
Lest it fester.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So is there, that's the other, yeah. So is there a statute of limitations?
Oh, like, I have no idea. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. No one's ever come up to me and been like, oh man, you said something to me 20 years ago and wow, did it change me?
Right, you know? Right. But it's so often the case. Like, you mean nobody's inside of your brain.
I know, right?
Like, so, I mean, it could be the case that like I was the one who messed up and like, would it make them feel better to know that I was like, I know I messed up. Like, you know,
sure.
Like this is me coming forward being like, hey, if it helps you at all, it would help me for you to know that I messed up.
Yeah. So often there are moments in my life where I'm like, how much should that affect me going forward? Like would it be worth trying to like talk to this person about a situation or would it just be interesting them to know that like, oh yeah, like no hard feelings or anything. There was just a thing you said to me when we were kids and it was like, it just changed a lot of stuff and I couldn't have even known it in the moment, but like I come back to it all the time and
isn't
it interesting?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No. And it's fast. The other piece of this as well, like is, and tell me, I mean, this is another one where I'd be curious to hear your thoughts as well, because here on the pop, like I've compared it to therapy before because like we're coming in, we're having a very, very, like intentional and engaged dialogue between the two of us in a way that can be unique compared to the outside world.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially, you know, like I can think of like any type of family gathering that we have, like where the whole family's in one place. Like you might think like, wow, that was so great. Like I got really good quality time with my family in. And not to say that that's not happening,
right,
but like inside of those occasions, it's almost like the fact, like the togetherness is sort of like, that is the thing that has the aura around it. It's like, you know, you get to like watch the kids go run off and play in the other room or go do this, that or whatever. But it's a lot harder when there's, you know, especially in our family of 15 people, you know, it can be harder to have like a deep and meaningful discussion while there's just so much other pulling on your attention.
Right. Yeah. Like at almost any given moment, a child needs attention from someone for some reason.
Yes.
Large or small. And there's, you know, like if chances are the person you're talking to is going to be pulled in some other direction or you're going to be pulled in some other direction before you're able to get like too deep about anything. And you know, maybe whatever might count as deep is like too personal to even have in a situation where the conversation could be overheard.
Also that, yeah. Which is a big one. But the reason I bring that up though, is because it's like, sometimes I'm like, well, how could it be the case, you know, that recording the pop with Jay could be, like breaking down other barriers of my life like this. And in some ways, like one of the things I've talked about in the past was like, you know, I feel like we reminisced early on in the pop about like some of like our high school adventures. So
yeah,
like I'm talking about some of these things and relieving yourself of it in a way that is almost like more negatively aligned, but the opposite can be true as well. Like a lot of times, like having like the ultimate reminiscence of an experience, can then sort of like you have like this positive memory and you then got far enough away from it that you then got to look back on it with one of the people that you experienced it with and re-experienced it joyously. And then as a result of that, it's almost like that memory itself also seems to like fade or like flit away in this like strange way for me. So it's like
you're getting like closure on positive things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is its own, it's been odd because I think sometimes it's making me now super crave like adding new ones before me.
Right.
Because I'm like, man, I've gone through and I've reminisced on like a lot of like these amazing moments of my life.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, it's like, wow, I now almost need to gotta go make some new ones.
I don't think I've really felt it like that. Like I've used up reminiscing about a thing.
Right.
Like I feel like there's so many times like when we get back, you know, like if you and me and Mike or John or something, like inevitably, you know, we will reminisce about something that happened in the past, even if it's the 10th time we've done it.
You're not wrong. I oftentimes do feel for our spouses because they're like, oh, then there was a time we went and spent the whole night in the cave. And they're like, yeah, we've heard this story so many times.
I think they like it. Who wouldn't want to hear that story?
No, I mean, I think they, I'm sure they do.
I bet
we were just warming them up the first like four times they heard it. And then from there it was like, well, now that I know the beats, like I can, I'm like, you're, you know, there. It's like, it's like hearing my favorite song.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Gotta hash it back out. On the note of that exact story, me and Beth just watched a Mr. Beast video where he locks himself in solitary confinement for 7 days.
Okay.
Basically, just like it's like in a white padded room where he's just in there by himself with no clock, notably. And like the lights don't turn off and the meals arrive at complete random times. So he has like no way of tracking time or anything. He's just going to be in there alone for 7 days. And I was just like, this reminds me like this, like it was so interesting to watch because when we were in the cave, the thing that you lose track of immediately is time.
Yeah.
Like so swiftly. And it was so interesting to like watch that. Cause like I sort of was watching, like, I know it's going to happen almost right away. And sure enough, just like your ability to judge time in any like meaningful way just is out the window so quickly. And we were only in there for one night and this was like 7 days, you know, and
yes.
He's like, you know, talking himself into like, there's got to be like, you know, if there's more than one day left, if there's more than 10 hours left, like I'm going to have to tap out. It's just like, well, there's 30 hours left. So, you know,
oh my gosh,
you're way off, but like, you don't even know. How would you even know if it had been 10 hours?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, your basis for anything. So yeah, as a refresher to anybody who hasn't heard the story before, once upon a time, there's in, near the New River, in Blacksburg, I guess, there is the New River Cave. And once upon a time, we used to go like spelunking, I guess, is probably the closest to technical term for what we were doing.
I think spelunking, I think that describes being in underwater caves.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't
like
realize
diving.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so anyway, what we would do though is we would like gear up, we would have like headlamps and all this type of stuff, and we would like helmets and all the rest, and we would go into a cave, you know, with an underground map of like where the cave goes and what it does and everything. But we would go so far into the earth that, I mean, like if you turn all the lights off, it is nothing but like thick velvet black.
Just such
like,
darkness.
There is, I mean, you can't see your fingers directly in front of your face.
Not
you could probably sleep with your eyes open because like there is no difference between them being closed and shut.
Right.
So once upon a time, the game plan was to go into the cave and attempt to see if we could spend the entire night in the cave and then what time we would be then exiting in the morning if we didn't have any clocks. And basically, you know, sleeping in a cave is kind of a miserable and uncomfortable experience because it is wet and cold and dark.
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of us was almost thinking like, oh my gosh, we're going to go in at, you know, 8-9 o'clock at night, whatever time it was, and we'll be back out here at like 3 a.m. and we'll be going to Waffle House and
right,
laughing like, about like, wow, we thought we were in there for a whole night. We had like told our friends and family, like, you know, if you don't hear from us by like, you know, noon the next day, at absolute worst case scenario, maybe start to worry at that point in time. But like, it won't come to that. We'll be fine. Like I have work, you know, like we'll definitely be out by then.
Oh my God.
And you know, so we go in, you know, like lamps go off at some point in time, we fall asleep for some amount of time. And you know, we wake up and we're like, all right, I think it's time to hoof it out of here. So we load up all of our gear and we show up and like the sun is in the middle of the sky.
Right. And it is like 1 p.m.
Yes. And our phones have been blown up and they, like, you know, of course we didn't have any cell service deep underground and like the whole family and, you know, like just everybody is just like, what happened to them? Like, are they okay? And it was just like, we had no idea. We had no idea. How long
we were like positive it was going to be like 6 a.m. in the morning or something.
Yeah.
And like, I think even like we were like trying to like, we should stay a little bit longer because otherwise we're just going to come out in the middle of the night and like, yeah, we should stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And I think there was like a bunch of other considerations as well at some point where it was like people like at some point everyone kind of had to get up and go to the bathroom. And it was like that should have been more of an indicator that like that's your like biological clock. It's like, yeah, you pretty much do that at the same time every day. And that's what was happening.
Right.
Because it was like 8 a.m. or whatever. But we were all just like, nah, you know,
it's like no big deal.
That
like,
doesn't mean anything.
I'll go climb back in my sleeping bag and sleep some more.
Yeah. Like I'll try to get some more sleep in here. This uncomfortable slab of rock we found. Yeah.
Ugh.
Super fun. But yeah, once you'd fallen asleep at all, like any amount of time you might have been able to judge, like just gone.
Yeah.
Which was super fascinating.
It was very, very, very jarring at the same time. So anyway, that was the cave experience.
Yeah.
Transition.
Transition.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Ben, I've been having a weird month or so.
Okay.
Wherein, because we were so busy in the month of December, like with holiday parties and just general things to do on the weekend, that I have been very disconnected from the Pokemon trading card game.
Oh.
Wherein I would say at this point, it has probably been like a month since I have like played a game at all.
Wow. That, I know. I mean, it is very unusual for you, because it's, I feel like once upon a time you had your like your main job, and like, yeah, Super Carlin Brothers was the thing that you did, like when you weren't thinking about your main job or, yeah, what you were having to resist think about.
Yeah.
And it seems like the TCG has largely become the thing that you think about that's not here.
Yeah, yeah. Like it was like this. Like, oh, it was like new hobby. It was like, oh yeah, trading cards. And like, you know, we have like the show where we open them. And like, you know, I was like, I would say for the most part, most of my YouTube consumption was just like more like Pokemon trading card game stuff. Like, oh, like, be aware of this. This is new in the meta. This is what the top decks are. These are, oh, this is sort of the funny like creative decks people have come up with right now. Or that's what you should. This is what tournament's happening. You know, this is the new set that's on the horizon. Like, we just finished filming an episode of Box Breaks. It's like, I can't even tell you the name of the next set. And it's like, it has been so, like, such a weird experience to me to have been like so deep and like so all focused on it, and to suddenly just be like I haven't done anything. I've like barely interacted with it, you know, like for like a month. Like, even when we opened the cards, I was like, God, I forgot what cards were in the set a little bit. And it has been like preying on my mind in this weird way over the past like week or so, where I'm like, I feel like almost like a responsibility to like open the app and like play a game, or like go watch some videos about it, or like do something. Cause like I haven't done anything, but at the same rate, I'm like, but I'm not really like super deterred. Like, I'm not feeling like, oh yeah, I can't wait to go play or anything. And I'm like, I just, it has just been this very weird experience where it's like, it's this thing that I know I like and have put a ton of time and energy into, but I'm also not feeling particularly compelled to do at the moment.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm, well, do you have, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I don't know. What's your take?
What's my take? Yeah. Well, so, I mean, this is not to try to like parallel everything back to the same exact scenario, but it's a curiosity a little bit, because I have on occasion, gone through similar experiences. To I'm going to compare it to the Zygarnik effect, okay, a little bit, right, because I think like in my mind, so if I'm like, you know, sitting across from you trying to like break down mentally what could have happened, mm-hmm, this is my interpretation, this is a possible interpretation.
Let's hear it.
Would be that, like, because I have this a lot, like what I will, like, there might be like a thing like I really want to buy, and then like I'll buy the thing, and then I'll sort of be like, you know, I don't know if I really, like, I've wanted this for years and now I have it, and I always thought, like, you know, that like once I had it, you know, like I would, that would be all about this thing, and now I do, and now I'm not doing it,
right?
And so that can be kind of like its own interesting version of like getting to the, you know, the end of the proverbial quiz. But like, I wonder if on any level, like, this was something that we loved as kids, mm-hmm, right? Like we were so into it, and I feel like I would, like, you know, as like a brotherhood, me, you, and Tyler, I feel like we all really wanted the cards. But I feel like maybe you more than I can't speak for Tyler, you more than me wanted to play the game,
right?
And I feel like as kids, it was kind of like one of those things that like we never really were able to do to the potential that maybe we would have wanted to, or you weren't able to do to the potential, because who were you supposed to play with if like your two brothers were unwilling to,
right,
like,
you didn't want to play
competitively play, and like, did we really know the rules that well, and like, you know, there wasn't like the ecosystem of the internet and like the forums and all that type of stuff, like to go and find community,
right,
which exists in such a better way now than it did then.
Sure.
We also lived in a small town that probably, I don't even know if it had a card shop.
Yeah. I mean, even if there were people gathering, even if there were like, you know, tournaments for kids available, which almost certainly there were somewhere,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't the sort of thing that mom and dad could take one of you two for 5 hours on a weekend.
Precisely.
And leave the rest of the family behind, like unless everyone was all in on it. But then, you know, is that how mom and dad want to spend their weekend? Like,
also true.
Probably not.
Right. But so then I think what I witnessed as your brother and kind of being like close by for a lot of this is that then you got really into Yu-Gi-Oh for a period of time, where we had like some neighbors who were willing to play. Tyler did play that when I remember competitive with you. And like we would go downstairs and like the pool table in our basement, and you guys would have it like set up, yeah, sort of as like the game board, so to speak.
Many, many games of Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yes. But once again, one of the things we talked about was like at that stage in life, it was like I could play the game, and it was always one of those where it was like, if I could go to the tournaments on the weekend, which you were doing and I think doing reasonably well at.
Yeah.
But it was still like you still weren't able to have been able to fully experience like, man, how great would it be if I could just buy each of the rare cards that I needed to have the best possible deck? Like, I'd be unstoppable.
It did. There was always that, like, yes, there was the sense of like, I Like, what is holding me back more than anything is card availability.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then we make it yet another big step forward in our lives, and we're kind of like doing what we do here at Super Carlin Brothers. And it was kind of like, man, maybe we can do like some card opening, you know, for like live streams, or like we can find some like different ways to like engage with it, because there's like a whole new, especially going through like the pandemic, like it seems like it had like a total resurgence. Like the nostalgia is just like hit and everybody was back into it, and
right,
like card collecting became like a big thing again. So then we're starting to like amass cards again, and I feel like you were struggling with a kind of battle of like, can I commit like time, energy, and resource to go and do this and like compete like more intentionally?
Yeah.
Like practice, travel, big tournaments, regionals, you right. know, like doing the thing. And so then I feel like we spent a lot of 2023 like sending you to those places.
I know,
places.
Yeah. I mean, I went to 3 regional tournaments in 2023.
Right. So like, I wonder if there's any part of you that feels like since you were a kid, and then really like this through line through your life, you're constantly like in this state of kind of like imaginative wonderment.
Like it's not complete.
It's not complete. Right. Yeah. Like it was always like, man, if I could just do that. And then if I could just, you know, have more cards, if I find the right people to play, if I was willing to let myself spend the time, energy, and money to go to a different city to play the game on the level, like what would happen? And it was sort of like I obviously can't speak for you, and not to say that I think your journey is over in any way, shape, or form, but like, I wonder if there's a piece of you that was sort of like, I got to push the boundaries mm-hmm. further than childhood me knew how to imagine them.
Sure.
And if on any level it was sort of like, okay, I did it.
Like, right. Yeah. Like we actually did it. Like, you got as far as you pretty much could without like really committing everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the reason that this theory comes to mind is because it was my exact relationship with rock climbing.
Yeah.
Which was like, it's the only sport that I ever felt addicted to. Like, yeah. I couldn't stop going, and I reached a point, and it was the same thing. It was like, the only way for me to excel more at climbing was to literally take it on as a part-time job, if not more.
Right.
And
like, you've hit like a really large plateau in the hobby.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, we're before. Yeah. I think there could be a certain amount of that happening for sure, where it's just like, you know what? Card access, no longer a problem. Like, travel, not necessarily like harder, but it could be accommodated,
yeah,
with enough planning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I think is what we did for most of 2023. Yeah.
I think, yeah, there is a certain part of me that's like, I think like the what it would take for me to go like win a regional or something feels like almost unattainable, to the point where it's like, there's such professional players and people who are so like all in on it that like, there's just, it's very difficult to compete when you've also just got family and everything else
right.
going as well. But then to what end is it that you're doing it other than just the joy of competing at all, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, but I mean, the big thing here is that like, you know, this was just another thing I had written down in the notes, but it was, you know, in life, do you regret the things that you did do or the things that you didn't do? And like, I think on some level it's like, you would never regret having gone and done all these things.
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah, no, I don't regret any of that at all.
Right.
Yeah. The question is, yeah, but it's like, I also don't feel like, part of me is just like, is it just the time of year that I've just sort of like even the thing is like, even if I'd wanted to go be doing all the things over the past month, like I just couldn't have.
Sure. Yes, you know, of
like
course.
It was just simply too much. Unavailable.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. Which, I mean, this brings me back to another question that I feel like I've posed in the past that I would continue to be curious about, is that I think our generation will retire from our careers very differently than I think than historically other generations have, or maybe exactly the same way other generations have. Like, it's just the case that like possibly like our grandfather, for example, has like 3 tractors, a bulldozer, and like a 1960 Ford truck and a boat. And it's like, they're all projects. They're all things that he can just go tinker on, because like they're like none of them are like particularly like brand spanking new or anything like that. Most of them are more antique than anything else. Yep. And you know, he would go out and like buy them, you know, at an auction, trailer them to his yard, find a way to get them to work. But like, you know, that is the way that he goes. And it's probably what he coveted for a huge portion of his life.
Right. Like how much of his life was he just like, all I want to do is go tinker on my tractors.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like nothing like that. That is what I want to do. And so it's like, you could be in the stage of life right now where you're looking at it, you're like, man, you know, like if anything, you know, Luke's starting basketball, you know, like, mm-hmm. like the kids are going to be doing these activities, like right. weekends are going to start to fill up. Like I'm not in necessarily like the exact, like valley of life, so to speak, where
yeah.
it feels like there's going to be grand opportunity to do these things. But it also doesn't mean that you're not still like maybe what you've now found is like when you were a kid, for example,
mm-hmm.
we didn't have the money at all to go buy unlimited Pokemon cards.
No.
And so maybe the wall you've run into now is just the same wall you ran into when we were like 13, 14. It was like, you know what? I don't have the time to do it in the capacity that I want to be able to do it, to excel at the way that I want to excel. But what to me that says is that it's not finished.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's done. I think, you know, I haven't gone to my last Pokemon regional yet. Yeah,
right.
You know, and like, I know the North American International Championships are coming up in New Orleans later this year, which I desperately want to go to.
I know. I want to go to that one just because I want to go to New Orleans New Orleans food.
It just sounds like so fun. Like, we just have to make a trip out of that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, because you can just go compete. So I think that'll be really fun. And I will say that it's like, it's interesting to me that it's like, and maybe it is just a scheduling thing, because like on the flip side, the other card game I play is on my phone. It's just called Marvel Snap.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I remember showing you some stat the other day that like part of the game, if you ever played like a mobile app before, they have like a ladder where, you know, the better you do, the higher on the ladder you get. And the way this game works is that if you get to like, you know, rank 100, you break into what's called infinite, which is like the next competitive level of the game, yes. I suppose.
Yep.
And it stops showing you where you are on the ladder and just where you rank in the world or something. And I hit infinite for the first time ever last month. And I showed you and I was like, oh, look, I know you're not going to have any context for this, but like, it's giving me a rank. And it was like 80,000 or something.
Sure.
And I remember the look on your face, just like, how is it possible that you are 80,000th? Like, there's no way there's that many more people playing.
I know. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was that. Yeah, you're exactly correct. Yeah. I was guffawed. I was like, there's no, I mean, cause this is like one of those things like where it's like anybody I talk to, if they talk about like their Mario Kart abilities or whatever, I'm like, well, you can't beat my brother. And I think that this has been true, like in every application of the conversation that I have witnessed thus far.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've seen a situation before where somebody sat down with you and really, truly, honestly was able to like contend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been one of those things where it's like, you have been so good at it in a way that in my mind, I'm like, he must be like categorically good at it.
Right.
You know, like, you know, like people can't beat him or whatever. And so like when I watch you play this and like, I know the level of tenacity and like commitment that you bring to like the games that you are like in love with, you know, it's like in my head, I'm like, there aren't many people on this planet. And to be fair, 80,000th out of like nearly 8 billion people on the planet still ranks you in incredibly high regard.
Right.
You know,
well, I think because we looked it up, because I was almost there, I was like, to me, because it's like, I've been playing this game for a while, and to finally hit infinite at all and just see what the rank was, and then it was like 80,000, I was like, I can't believe 79,000 other people have already done this month.
I know.
You know, that's the crazy thing.
I know.
But yeah, like, we looked up, like, what is the player base of the game, and it's like 8 million.
Yes.
And it's like, are you kidding me? 8 million people this game, like, that blew my mind.
I know. Yes, it is. Yeah, it's just mind boggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like one of those where I was like, I don't know how it is possible that there could be 80,000 people on this planet who have played as hard as he has played, when I know he is as good at strategic based games as he is.
Right. So this was a sort of an interesting tidbit. So that was the first time I ever did it. And okay. I got to work early so I could try and make it, because I was at like, you know, 98 or something.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to be at work early. All I'm going to do is sit out on the couch. Work be darned. I'm going to make a solid effort at getting to 100. Like, I am going to do it. I know this is as close as I've ever been. I'm going to make it.
It's
going to
happen.
And like, we had to like go, Like, so the way it was going to work was that, like, at 2 o'clock that day, the ladder, the month was going to reset. Oh, so, and I was like, if I don't get it by 2 o'clock, I'll be reset down to like level 70 or something. And I'll have to do the whole thing over the next month again. I was like, this, like, I've got it. And I was like at like 99 or something. We had like, it was like 150 and we were about to go record our other podcast through the Gryffindor. And I was like, this is literally it. This is my last game before like I have to go sit down and do something else that will take me over the line. So no matter what happens, there's like a betting system sort of, or like a wagering, like a confidence wager basically.
Right, right, right.
Where you can bet your cubes or whatever. And so the game started and I just immediately hit it before I even looked at my hand. And like the other, I guess my opponent at some point felt like they were going to win, so they also did it, which pushed it to an 8-cube game, and I won, and I couldn't believe it, and I crossed over. So I literally got like over the line with like 2 minutes to spare,
like skin on your teeth.
Like, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I made it. And so I think I was basically like it is possible I was the last person over the line that month, and that put me at 80,000.
or probably by proper expectations, assuming you were 80,000th in the world at this game, you were like 4,000th from being the last person.
I know. Like, turns out, another.
Like everybody else in the world just sitting there on the wire.
I know. Well, so over Christmas break, though, I had a lot of free time because we had COVID.
Yeah, the whole family, we were all stuck. Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try and make my little infinite climb again. And this time I hit it I hit it with 26 hours to spare this time.
Wow.
I was in a whole day early.
Luxurious.
It was quite a good final game. I thought it was. I was in the zone.
26 hours, plenty of time, and go spend one night in a cave.
And the difference between getting there with like 2 minutes to spare and 26 hours to spare was, instead of being at 80,000, I was up to like 50,000.
Oh my gosh. Which
means like over the, like if you, I mean, who knows what the conversion rate is, but it seems like over the course of that last day, like 30,000 more people must have crossed the line.
Oh my, yep.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So getting there like one day earlier just made like a huge jump difference.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So now you've been as high as 50,000.
I think I've been as high as 49.
In the fours.
Yeah. And then once you're in there, it seems like, you know, if you win a big game, it'll move you up like, you know, 1,000 spots at a time, but then you'll also drop correspondingly as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I was having a similar kind of experience where I was like, a classic Ben is that I basically found something like 15 years ago and have pretty much only ever enjoyed one game ever since then.
Yeah.
But there's the iconic tower defense game is Kingdom Rush.
Oh, it's so good. It's the best tower defense.
It is
game.
The best. It's like the
all
little
versions of it.
Yes. It's so great. It's so great. But so I was playing, and if you play through, I think like the campaign once or whatever, it unlocks like horde mode, which is basically just like, their monsters will just keep coming until you fail, which is honestly has always been like one of those things that like I have like loved inside of video games, because it's like nobody can beat it. There is no beating it.
Right.
You just continue to go.
Just how far can you get?
Exactly. And so I forget what it was, if I was like traveling over the summer or something. There was some impetus that led me to playing it a bunch on the plane. And normally I play it on the plane and only on the plane, and then I land and then I don't open it again until I fly home, and then I don't open it again until the next time I go anywhere.
Sort of have to like relearn it every time a little bit.
Precisely. Yeah. And for whatever reason, I think it was because I found the horde mode for the first time ever instead of just like playing the campaign. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty cool. Let me see how far I can go. And so for a while, I kept debating on bringing it up on the pop because I almost like wanted to like put my like score out there and just challenge everybody to be
it.
Like,
yeah.
Come at me, bro. Like, and it was because it was exactly what you're talking about. There's like a worldwide leaderboard that you can like chime into. And it was sort of like this thing where it was like, and part of the problem with the game was that once you got so far, it would take you like 35 minutes to complete a round.
Yeah.
So like you were having to like set up all these like little things early on, and then you wouldn't know for like another like 25 to 30 minutes whether or not it was like working when push came to shove.
Oh, that is, yeah, that game, like the amount of time and effort you have to put into like getting another score at all.
Yes.
Is hard.
It is. But I think I want to say I capped off, but it was very similar. So like I started like hitting like the global leaderboard or whatever, which I think was more out of like a million people, not anywhere near like what you're up against with Marvel Snap, and it's an ancient game. But I was getting to the point where it was like, you know, I would get like a new high score and it would move me up from like 10,000th in the world to like 7,000th in the world.
Right. Yeah. Like that's where like every 30 seconds you survive is like flying you up the leaderboard.
Yes. Because at this point in time, the people who are in front of you by like 10 points on a game that has like millions of points being scored.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just a little bit better is a lot better.
A lot better in the overall leaderboard. Yeah.
That is. But what's crazy, this is the baffling part to me, Ben, that we looked up this game, like Marvel Snap has like an 8 million person player base.
Yes.
And like I got over Infinite and I'm in whatever, 80,000th or whatever. And that's clearly not everyone playing the game, but I don't know a single person in real life
that plays.
Who plays. Like, it's like you're like on an, like, it consumes, like, I love it so much. It's one of my, if you don't play it, Marvel Snap, such a fun game.
Not sponsored.
Yeah. But like, It's like I'm in there experiencing it, putting like time and energy into it. And it's like I'm on an island, you know, it's like I don't know anyone who plays it in real life, despite there obviously being, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who love this game.
Yes. Yes. You know?
Like,
no, it's
like, where are they?
Yeah. Where are my peeps at?
Where is everyone? I don't get it.
No, I know. This is exactly what we used to always say with Twitter. It was like, you know, it's like we were like, you know, we do what we do. And so as a result, we have Twitter accounts and stuff like that. We spend time on Twitter. But like if I go and hang out with my friends, and I mean, this is not all the way across the board, but like most of my friends, I would say almost all of my friends don't have Twitter. And the people who do probably created it because I was doing something on Twitter and they joined it just to be like helpful.
Right. You know? Like some of the people I know, I know some people who like have it just to look at Twitter.
Sure.
You know, not because they have tweeted anything and, you know, don't have something more than an egg as their profile picture.
Yeah. Classic.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Classic.
Twitter now X.
Yep. Sorry. The platform formerly known as Twitter. Whatever. Yeah.
But no, it feels exactly like that, where it's just like, it's like there's like tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of people use it. It is a highly robust platform, and yet somehow I don't know anyone who does.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, am I getting punked over here?
Right.
What's
I know.
Going
yeah.
on?
This is, yeah. Like, how could this be possible?
How can I have so much fun with it and no one I know even is like, has any idea?
I wonder if this is like a shared problem. Like it would almost be like out, like being like in the middle of like the Pacific Ocean, and it's like millions of islands that are all 1 mile apart from each other, mm-hmm. like just far enough that you probably can't even see them off in the distance. But like whatever that distance is, that's exactly how far every other person is. So every single person who plays thinks that they're the only one who does, and yet they are surrounded by just like miles and miles and miles and miles and miles in every single direction of other people who are just alone on their islands.
Right. This is like everyone like afraid to say they play. So maybe it's just the sort of thing you wouldn't assume comes up.
Maybe not. Yeah.
The game I played before this was called Clash Royale. Same thing. Just hyper popular game.
Yeah.
Like, and I used to play it. I don't anymore. But like, I played it for years without knowing another person in real life who played it until one day, I was at the dentist and my dental hygienist had like finished doing like the cleaning and we're like, okay, the dentist will be over in like a minute. And it had been like several minutes. I was like, I'm just going to play around right now because it seems like this is taking longer than expected.
Yeah.
And the dentist comes over and he looks at my friend and goes, oh my God, do you play Clash Royale? And I was like, no way.
Did we just become best friends?
I know. I was like, we could be best friends right now.
Is it, you know? Okay. So here's the question though, is like, is, I wonder if this is the case for people, if there is something inherent about like using what mobile games you do feel like, I wonder if like for some reason it feels personal, like it feels like something that you do alone, like if they're almost meant to be like a one-way relationship type thing.
Yeah,
because like on top of this, I am certain that plenty of my friends have mobile games that they play. I'm pretty sure Kat in the Office for a while was like really big in like a Mario Kart version of an app-based game.
Right. Yeah.
But it was like one of those things where she was like, I play it all the time. And I was like, I have never seen you play it before.
Never.
Like, not once. And of course, I spent a lot of time around you, so of course, I've seen you play Marvel Snap before, but like, plus you're often waiting for me in here to come and record the show, and like, I'll walk in, and you're
right,
hold on, let me
finish a game real quick.
Yeah, who's waiting on who now? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But like, I wonder if this is a thing. Like, I'm not asserting that it is, I'm just curious if it is, that like, if people in their relationships with their games, is because I suspect that people are playing their mobile games when they are otherwise bored. And chances are, if you are bored, it's because you're not around other people.
Yeah.
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 So like,
it's not like you're sitting down to play with someone else.
Right.
You're right. It is like a hard to identify like shared hobby or something.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly it. So like, I wonder, I almost even wonder if like our own perceptions of mobile games. So not to throw car brands under the bus or anything like that, because I have no issues or judgments on these whatsoever. But I know that both like Kia and Hyundai for quite some time have been doing a really, really good job of finding their way into the like automobile conversation by making like really great cars.
Yeah.
But if you date back to like the early 90s, at some point in time, I think Kia literally ran a buy one, get one free campaign for one of their cars. And it was like a fairly inexpensive car, and you got two of them.
Right.
And it was because at some point in time, they were competing on the basis of value, not really on quality, which has changed drastically. And they're much, much, our dad drives a Hyundai now. They're much better vehicles than they once were, but they're still fighting the perception that had existed in the past.
Right.
And I wonder if mobile games have this in any way where like, if you're playing like Breath of the Wild, for example, it's like, it has so much clout and like cachet attached to it that like you have no qualms whatsoever about coming in and being like, yeah, I played like 2 hours of Breath of the Wild last night, because you know that people will like resonate and get that. But I wonder if people, you think that if you said like, I spent 2 hours playing Marvel Snap last night, someone's gonna be like, you gotta find something better to do.
I know, like I think there is like this line with specifically mobile games where it's like, I will play it when I have nothing else to do, but it's never like I'm like looking forward to play. I'm never like identifying it as like a hobby or something.
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, to me there, it feels like there's something inherently, from a perception standpoint, cheaper about the experience of a mobile game versus like a console game or a PC game.
Yeah.
But I think that probably what has happened is that as phones and everything have become a lot more sophisticated, so have the games.
Yeah.
And then as well as, you know, that technology pressing forward, the consumers, the users are also a lot more savvy. So they're able to like participate in these games in a much more competitive capacity, even if it's not being as like broadly recognized.
Yeah.
Because I feel like even at one point in time, you told me that there are like Marvel Snap content creators that you like follow and like, you know, tune into advice from. And even that, to me, I was like, there are content creators around a mobile game, like, which again is like, this is my misperception, not anything else, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, yes, there are. And like, not just like one or two, like many.
Yeah.
You know, this is people like, they wake up and they stream 8 hours of Marvel Snap, and that's their week.
Right.
You know, they convert some of it into YouTube. They do commentary. They probably do coaching or whatever. But like, this is like, it's not like, oh yeah, Marvel Snap amongst other games, I mix it up. It's like, no, this.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So what I was trying to surmise here really quickly is that, I was trying to look, so I think this is for 2022. So maybe there could be a more recent piece of data for 2023, but this is saying that in the year 2022, Marvel Snap from Second Dinner Studios Inc. Generated $116 million in revenue. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that's fascinating to me is I oftentimes talk about like the movie theater principle, which is like, can you spend $10 even in an in-app purchase, for example? And usually my argument would be like, well, you would spend $10 for a 2 hour movie theater experience. So if you can find 2 hours of entertainment from that in-app purchase, then there you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, $116 million, I mean, I wouldn't say it's the most competitive box office like score ever for like a feature film.
That almost seems like a low number to me.
I mean, it seems low to me as well, but you know, this is like one of those things where it's like, there are plenty of films that come, you know, that are like blockbuster films that would come to the theaters, and you know, hitting that number would be at least somewhat, you know, remarkable.
Right.
And so, I mean, to me, that's wild, because this, even if like, that's just one app.
Yeah.
You know,
and this says in 2023, Marvel Snap generates 8 to 9 million per month on average.
8 to 9 million.
Which I guess still gets you at about the same number.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yep. That sounds about crazy. Right. Yeah.
Well,
that is wild.
So my question for you guys is, one, do you, if you play Marvel Snap, please let me know, because I feel like there's, I must know people.
Can you add friends?
I don't know. There's not like a friendship. There's not like clans or anything in there yet. Although, man, I think that's coming this year and we should have a popcorn culture clan if that happens.
That would be
otherwise,
fun.
not even just Marvel Snap. Do you play a mobile game with like any amount of like intentional intensity outside of I'm sort of bored right now? Like, just do you have a game you play?
Yes.
On your phone that like you are dedicated to?
Right.
I want to know.
Yes.
Like, just because it would just make me feel more comfortable, I think, if I just knew that other people do.
Right.
But because clearly they do. Like, it's like, they're raking it in. People are doing it. They're spending money. You know, like, well, people are invested.
So, I just looked at this. So, this is just another fun fact for you. So, Clash Royale, that's the other one you played?
That's the other one I played.
Okay. Yeah. So, lifetime Clash Royale has surpassed more than $3 billion.
Not surprised.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B.
That means that Clash Royale, the mobile app, has made more money than Avatar did at theater.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like,
it's insane.
But you could talk to any person. And they know, if you were to say, are you aware of the film Avatar with the Na'vi, the blue people? I would be willing to bet that you could go and pull any person on the street and they would at least know what it was, even if they haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I bet you could pull the same people and say, do you know what Clash Royale is? And it would not be the same.
I agree. You're right. It would not be the same.
Oh.
And it's out there like quietly, just.
Maybe this is what's happening. Maybe like we all pay attention because it's such a big thing. It's like whenever a new film comes out, like you're like, oh, but how did they do it at the box office? How did like it's a testament to whether or not the film is good. It's its box office score. And this app alone is absolutely smashing the best box office score.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my God. That's so funny. Okay. Yeah. So be sure to let us know which mobile games do you play and how invested have you been with them? Are you competitive? Are you into it?
Yeah.
Do you think you can beat us at Marvel Snap and or Kingdom Rush?
Oh, bring it on.
There you go. Send all your feedback to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, if you would like to support the show, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/popcornculture, where we have a variety of fun tiers available for you and some additional content. If you want to check it out, patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.